So rest assured, there are no plans to conduct an exhaustive review about the blessing and responsibility of knowledge. An exhaustive review would be exhausting and probably discouraging as well. So rather, we'll just consider a few selected aspects of this very broad, deep, and really also very important topic. I've selected a somewhat personal approach. When I was asked to share comments with you today, I understood that request to mean that you would want to learn how God becomes real to me in my daily work. So that's the target. I will let you know how faith and work come together for me. But to get to that, you deserve a little background first to explain why I got into the field of education and why teaching and learning matter. Well, they do matter because God is in the business of knowing. The psalm that we just read makes that abundantly clear, and I specifically chose that one because it is so personal and it allows us each to see how God wants to know each one of us. So we know that God knows everything. We've been taught this since we've been children. And what we read in the Bible has reinforced that. Just think of all the knowledge that pre-existed when God created the world. Think of the importance he attached to Adam gaining knowledge when he assigned Adam the task of ruling over, I'm quoting, the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, over all the creatures that move along the ground, as we read in Genesis 2. In short, God made Adam the administrator over nature, and that meant that Adam would have to learn to increase his own knowledge about all the plants and animals God had placed in Adam's care. So God already knew all the details about the fish and the mammals and the birds. Adam would have to learn all that in order to know what he needed to know to rule over nature. He would have to observe and remember which animals, for example, were nocturnal and which ones were active by day. He would have to learn which animals needed a swampy habitat versus wide plains to roam in. So God hadn't just given Adam all the knowledge immediately when he put Adam in charge, but he gave Adam the capacity to know, a desire to know, a curiosity. So when God created humans in his own image, he endowed us with a curiosity to find out things and an ability to remember them. And then in addition to the curiosity and the memory, we were given the capacity to make connections and draw conclusions. So let's hold on to this thought for a moment. God made humans in his own image, and that involves a capacity to know, but in order to reach knowledge, humans need to work at it. We need to learn. And while knowledge is the goal of our learning, we need to go a step further to ensure that this knowledge is truly useful. We need to know that we know the truth. And that's where blessing and responsibility meet. Because in order for knowledge to be a blessing, it needs to be gained and shared responsibly. We need to share knowledge that leads to truth. We need to learn knowledge that leads to truth. And the matter of truth is really important here. So think back to the Garden of Eden for a moment. After giving Adam a wonderful environment with a huge variety of fruits to enjoy, God warned Adam that there was one tree that he must not eat of. So he had all the variety of fruits. He had peaches, he had apples, he had pears, he had mangoes, he had bananas, he had kiwi, and that's just the beginning of it. Just one tree he was not meant to eat from. And that was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Well, we know how that went. What tripped Adam and Eve up all those years ago was that they got curious and they trusted the wrong information. Think about it. Eve presumably had Adam's instruction to leave that tree alone. She knew Adam well. Adam was his, was her companion, was her lover, was the only one who was really like her in that whole setting. Adam was the only one who was really like her in that whole setting. They were surrounded by animals, so there really wasn't anyone with whom Eve could communicate in the way that she communicated with Adam and with God when God came to visit. So Adam probably told Eve, you know, we've got all this abundance here, all this beauty, all this variety. Just stay away from that one tree. However, along comes the snake, a beguiling critter that appeals to Eve's curiosity, and she caves. And then there's Adam. On the one hand, he has the instructions from God, who placed him in a bountiful setting and allowed him to do nothing more difficult than to just rule over creation. And then there's Eve, whom he loves, but who still is no equal to God, and Adam caves to her. So Adam and Eve trusted and therefore obeyed the wrong source. And keep in mind that the snake's reason was not completely untruthful. When Adam and Eve ate of the tree, they didn't physically die on the spot. However, this is where the background connects with my work. As an educational institution, Thomas Nelson's purpose is to help people to be successful. We want to train anyone who comes to us to be careful whom they trust. And I don't need to tell you that there's an abundance of misinformation out there. Some of it is blatantly contradictory. They can't both be true, right? Think about it. You hear the vaccine for COVID doesn't do any good. On the other hand, oh yes, get the vaccine, it protects us. You hear red meat is bad for us. On the other hand, you hear red meat has ingredients that we need. Which source do we trust? Or to more spiritually important matters, redemption through the blood of Jesus is the only way to heaven. No, it's not. There are other means to get to heaven. Whom do we trust? So one of our main goals as educators everywhere is to train people to look for reliable sources of information and become discerning about what they believe. And the second goal of our mission at the college is not just to train people's minds, but also to train their hands, to give them skills that will help them contribute to the economy. Now, here is where I'm trusting a source that I consider reliable, because this is not something that I've personally checked out myself. But I read that Jesus himself has a whole lot more to say about money in his teaching than he has to say about heaven. I bring this up not to discredit what Jesus did say about heaven, but to highlight the importance that Jesus attached to people having their needs met. Jesus acknowledged the importance of money. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil, not the money in and of itself. We can do a lot of good with money. We can be generous with money. In fact, we need money in order to be generous. And I'm just going to insert here that if you have a look at our bulletin today, you will just see just how bountiful and how much of a blessing money can be. So generosity depends on having the means to be generous. And that's one of the goals of our college as well. We want to prepare folks to become contributing members of a wholesome society, whether that has to do with preparing them for further education or whether that has to do with giving them skills with which to work. So in all this business of knowledge, we're sort of a hub. We're brokers, if you wish. On the one hand, we've got students coming to us who want knowledge. And on the other hand, we have faculty who deliver that knowledge, who do the teaching so that students can learn. And it's at this hub, this connection between faculty and students, that my work comes into play. One of the things I do has to do with the planning of the academic schedule, so that classes are offered that students need in order to complete their curricula, that they're offered at times when students are available to take them, that courses don't conflict with one another that students need, and of course that we have faculty assigned to each of the courses, and that faculty schedules don't conflict. So there are a lot of moving parts here that all need to fit together. So the planning part is a major piece of my work. And the other major piece of my work is compliance with all sorts of regulations. So Thomas Nelson Community College is one of 23 colleges in Virginia. And we're about the fourth or fifth largest, depending. There's another one that's very close, and we sort of alternate fourth and fifth spots. But still, out of 23, we're among the larger ones. And we have a system office in Richmond that gives us a lot of guidance and tells us what to do, what not to do, that creates policies for us. So there are those policies to follow. But then the Virginia Community College system in turn is subject to the State Council for Higher Education, which includes all the public universities as well. And they also have their rules. So we have the rules of the community college system to follow, which also have to comply with the rules of the State Council of Higher Education. And then we have an external accrediting agency, the Association of Schools and Colleges of the Southern States, SACS, COC. So those are all bodies to whom we are responsible for, number one, maintaining records, and also making sure that we follow all the rules stipulated by each one of those. And that's one of the areas that's the other major area that concerns my work. Now, as you can imagine, from time to time, interests conflict, right? On the one hand, we're very interested in student success. We want students to get through community college with a degree. On the other hand, we have to be academically straight. So we can't just pass students because we want to increase our graduation rates. Those degrees that students earn do need to mean something. And there are times when, you know, interests compete. We have students who did poorly, but who think they deserve a degree. They will come and they will question decisions, and I have to do some mediating from time to time. And or sometimes it has to do with a difference between academic interests and financial interests. Students receive financial aid for courses they take, but if they miss too many classes, they lose that financial aid. So, but there are times when there are extenuating circumstances, and there, you know, the student really has a very good reason why he or she couldn't attend regularly. And again, those are situations in which I need to make decisions and exercise my judgment to the best of my ability. And honestly, here is where my job becomes a bit of a personal liability, because I have to judge fairly frequently, and the decisions I make have to stand. And in other words, I have to be right. Well, you know, there's just a very little difference between being right and becoming self-righteous. And I just have to be very careful about not becoming judgmental or self-righteous derogatory about situations. So that's where my job is a challenge for me. But I have to go with the statement from Paul, who says, in my weakness, that's where I'm strong. And I just have to learn to trust God to give me the right decision, but then also to stick to it without condemning myself. So in essence then, my own role is in the Office of Arts, Business, Humanities, and Social Sciences. And essentially, this allows me to serve a group of faculty members in their endeavors to teach faithfully and effectively. I try to eliminate barriers to effective education, specifically by planning the academic schedule and by guiding faculty so that we're on the same page. I also pay attention to compliance, and this is where my faith and my work connect. I'm responsible to higher authorities, but I also have to lead people who report to me. What really matters, though, is that we're furthering one of the gifts God has placed in all humans, the gift to use our innate curiosity toward worthwhile learning, which in turn depends on effective teaching. Teaching and learning that leads to knowledge, and knowledge that helps us to uncover the truth, or knowledge that builds our skills so that we can provide for ourselves and for our families. Thank you for your attention.